Hey, you guys, what's up? It's Monday.
Yeah, we gotta go out tonight.
Yeah, so we might be a little hungover tomorrow, but
Yeah.
it'll be okay.
I'm drinking the booze I was drinking last night. I fucking fell asleep. The shit was on the fucking nightstand. I'm still drinking.
It's like, well, you can't waste it. Oh, I didn't realize that was booze. I thought it was just like
No.
lemonade or something.
No. No, it's
Okay, that was the cocktail we had last
pineapple.
night.
Yeah, pineapple and vodka.
Well, man, where's
Yeah, honey.
mine?
You drank yours.
I know. Yeah, I did. Drank mine while I was watching some riff tracks last
Yeah.
night.
All
But
right, so we're gonna start this one. You already got one naysayer in the comment section saying this movie's junk, dude. That's petty ass saying that shit. You know what you're talking about, dude. Yeah.
this was
Anyway.
actually a really entertaining movie. I
Yeah.
don't know if I don't remember if I saw this one back in the day. I'm sure I probably did because I kind of saw everything. But
70s classic.
yeah, it's from 1978, Capricorn One.
Practical effects. This is the only movie I know of where they got a dude hanging on the fucking side of the fucking biplane. Telly Savalas flying it, and they actually hit the airplane with a helicopter, and that's just real.
Well, I was watching
It's
something
just real.
about this earlier. I mean, obviously, when they do the close-ups of the kind of airplane, the
Yeah.
crop dusting airplane being chased by the helicopters,
Yeah.
when they do the close-ups, those are obviously optical shots. Although they look pretty good, like
Yeah.
for optical, but they actually talked to the guy that flew the plane, like the stunt guy,
Yeah.
and he said that this was, I think he said like during this whole career, this was the most dangerous
Yeah.
stunt, airplane stunt that he'd ever done, and it shows. Like
Yeah.
if you watch the movie, because we're sitting there watching it going, but that looks real. That doesn't, you
Yeah,
know
I
what I
think it was
mean?
real. I think it
That
was real.
doesn't look like fucking.
I think it was real. I think they just said it was fake so they could get away with it.
Nobody said it was fake.
No, I'm talking about the close-up shots where the fucking
Oh no,
helicopter, where the helicopter
well, those, I
skids.
wasn't talking about that. I was
Oh.
talking about the ones where like James Brolin was like hanging on the wing,
Oh,
like stuff
no.
like that. Those are optical because you can see around
Yeah.
the edges.
No, but when that helicopter skid hits the top of that airplane, that looked real.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was real.
Yeah.
I mean, everything in that, like all the airplane stuff looked real. And
Yeah.
they did too, there's one like a famous kind of car chase in it, like with Elliot Gould in the car,
Yeah.
where it's kind of going through all the thing. And I think they used that footage in a bunch of other movies as
Yeah.
well, which, isn't that budget minded?
I was air assault qualified, worked with a lot of fucking helicopters out on OP-311, did an MFO mission up in Egypt. And we were doing sling loads and shit off of UH-1 Hueys. And people would think that it was that a helicopter, a hovering helicopter, would be like, they're very mighty, of course. You know what I mean? They can lift fucking hellacious fucking weight. But if it's just hovering, you can just grab that skid and pull that helicopter. You wouldn't think you could, but you can. Because he's just trying to remain neutral. And when he's remaining neutral, it's kind of weightless. Like it doesn't have much mass. It doesn't take much to offset that helicopter. Now, if he was to hit the controls, of course, it would just take off. But if he's trying to just hover, you could, and that's the same thing with those airplanes. When he was hovering above that airplane, the relative speed wasn't very fast, you know? And the masses involved are lifting bodies, so they'll bump off each other. When I saw that shit happen, I was like, man, that was a real impact. I was impressed. They'd never do that today.
Well, yeah, because probably
Hit,
people would get killed.
yeah, hit an
They're
airplane with a helicopter.
like, "We're just fuck it.
Yeah.
We're just gonna do it. It's the '70s.
Yeah,
We
and
don't give a
then
shit."
yeah, and then you got fucking Greco-American legend Telly Savalas flying that shit. That was a real man there, Telly.
Although I don't,
Telly was
he didn't really fly the plane. They
no, he didn't
said
really
he
fly
was
the
actually like terrified of flying.
Yeah, but
So he's like, "Fuck that. I'm not doing that. I'm just gonna
he was a mad lad though.
pretend."
He was a mad lad in real life though. Fucking he was evidently a good dude. Everybody loved him. He was the shit. Macho motherfucker. He was an ass grabber.
He's like
You had to watch it
he's
around him.
well, yeah,
Yeah.
you know. Yeah, I'm surprised he didn't get
Hey, who loves your
he
baby?
didn't get maced.
Who loves your baby?
But
He can get away with murder, though.
the thing about it, well, he's
Yeah.
great in this. It's like it's
Yeah.
not a huge part. He just kind of like it's almost kind of like a, I don't want to say it's like a glorified cameo, but he's only like in a scene near the end. It's
Yeah.
kind of good. It's Karen Black is in this too.
Yeah, sexy ass Karen Black.
Even though
Who
she
the.
also just has, she's like a special appearance by
Yeah.
kind of thing.
She's still got that slightly cross-eyed look, though. She's fucking hot. I don't know what it was. She's got
Yeah.
a great fucking Disney cartoon profile and everything with her little fucking nose bridge that goes in. They knew what they were doing when they casting her.
Louis said
She was
OJ's
cute.
in this one, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
OJ when he had a good reputation.
Yeah, although it's, well, it's funny because this wasn't his first acting role. He was in Towering Inferno.
Yeah.
Prior to this.
I remember that one.
And, yeah, so I guess, like, he was recommended to be in this movie, and Peter Hyams, who wrote and directed it, he was kind of like, I don't know, I saw The Towering Inferno, and he just wasn't that good an actor. But he kind of came around. Like, he was all right in this. He's barely in it, I mean, to be honest with you.
He has some lines, though.
He has, like, a handful of lines, and he doesn't, but he's not, like, a main character.
He kind of had that kind of an all-American fucking vibe to him, you know. Of course, you know, when O.J. first appeared, he was a football hero, and he just had kind of a real good guy image, you know what I mean? He was kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, how'd that work out? Yeah. Not so
time
good.
Wasn't kind to him. Time wasn't kind to him. But he was kind of like, I don't know, kind of like the black Steve Austin or something. What was that guy's name? Fucking played Steve Austin back in the day.
I don't know. I'll think of it in a minute. I can't think
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, he was on the fucking Evil Dead series. Played Ash's dad.
Yeah, I know. I just can't remember. I just can't remember his name right now.
Yeah.
Because I was kind of, I was reading comments and I was trying to, I was thinking about this movie. So, Lee Majors.
Lee Majors. That's right. That's what Lou said. OJ was kind of like the black Lee Majors back in the '70s. They were kind of like on par in certain ways. He kind of an all American hero, fucking all American type dude, square jawed motherfucker. You know, so they were putting him in movies. So he did a lot of commercials. I remember him as a kid.
Yeah.
And he just had like a squeaky clean, all-American hero image. Until that fateful day. But, you know, well.
Rob says, piece of trivia, Elliot Gould was married to Barbara Streisand before James Brolin. Ooh.
Yeah.
So we have two. Okay, so what was the timeline on this? Had they... was one of them married to her at this point, like in 1978? Yeah. So they're working on the same movie together, and it's just like that'd have been really fun.
Yeah, now James Brolin's in this. If you don't know who that is, because that's the dude from Amityville Horror,
yeah.
The dude with the beard, played Mr. Lutz, and he's carries the movie. He's kind of like the main character in it.
Yeah,
main
well, kind of like Hal Holbrook has like a really big part in this.
Yeah, he's in it, right?
But interestingly, I don't know if you know this, but the guy that wrote and directed this, Peter Hyams, he also made Outland with Sean Connery.
Good movie.
If you remember that one. He made 2010.
Yeah, I liked that one also.
He made a couple Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, Sudden Death and Time Cop.
Actually, Sudden Death was good. Time Cop was a missed opportunity. It was one of the better Van Damme movies.
And he made End of Days.
Okay, yeah.
Same guy that made End of Days.
Yeah, End of Days. That was the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm pretty
right?
sure that was the Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, that was
one.
Another
He made The Relic, too, which was actually...
End of Days was corny as shit.
It was. I think I saw that in the theater.
Yeah.
I didn't love it. Well,
one
like
of
I
the
said,
worst Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, if you ask me.
Well, yeah. But, So Peter Hyams actually got the idea for this way back in 1972. And the idea that he had, I guess he started out working in TV, and he worked at CBS. And he was actually working at CBS when they did the moon landing. And he's like, so it occurred to him, he's like, you know, it's this really big, you know, momentous thing that happened in history, like landing on the moon. And really the only witnesses to it that we have, other than the dudes that actually did it, were TV cameras. And he's like, wow, that would be like super easy to fake. Because he was thinking to himself, and he actually, there's a quote, and it's even on the Wikipedia page, where he says something like, well, you know, my parents' generation believed everything that they saw in the newspapers, and we knew that that's bullshit. And he's like, and my generation kind of believed everything they saw on TV, and we also found out that that was bullshit. So he's like, so I got really interested in making a movie about what if, not necessarily the moon landing being faked, but something else like that. What if there was something momentous like that that was faked because, you know, you could do it all through TV. And it's interesting because he wrote the movie and nobody wanted to make it until Watergate happened. And then suddenly everybody was like, yeah, this sounds like a plausible,
like
it's a plausible shit. Right. I don't know. Well, the thing about it, it's like if you watch the movie, it's not super believable, like the way you go about it, but it's still like entertaining.
It's an action movie. It's an action-adventure kind of movie with government intrigue and, like, nowadays you'd call conspiracy theory. But a lot of the shit was plausible. The reaction, public reactions, and how governments fucking, how they would react to certain things, kind of plausible. Just interesting. It's and it's done in a 1970s motif, which, to me, I think it ages well. Somebody's asking... Somebody was saying that they saw it many times when they were kids, and it probably doesn't hold up today. It holds up well as entertainment.
Yeah, it was actually like way more entertaining than I thought, because I don't remember if I saw this when I was a kid. If I did, I probably did, but I didn't. It didn't like stick with me.
I saw little flashes of it,
but
I don't think I ever watched the whole thing.
But I thought it was like really entertaining.
It's pretty good, yeah.
I thought it was really entertaining.
Yeah, and what it's about is a group of astronauts. They're training to go to Mars, and they're in the damn launch capsule, and they're just getting ready to launch. They got 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, dude in the suit opens up the hatch and says, come out of there. You're like, what?
It's an emergency. Come on.
Yeah, get out of there. Like, what? And they take the astronauts out. And they sneak them away in a damn bus, and the fucking capsule leaves without them. And then, and they're like, they trusted this dude. You know what I mean? They've dealt with him for a long time. He's part of the space program. But it's like the space program, the CIA, they both kind of working together. And they said that, look, for budgetary reasons, we cannot afford any kind of accidents. So we're going to remove the risk.
Well, that they knew that there was going to be, because they said ended up happening was the contractor that made the life support system, they had like lowballed it and made like a shitty one, and they found out later. So they're like, oh, well, it would have failed, so you guys would have died.
Right.
And we can't afford, like, NASA's going to get defunded if we have another fuck up, so we can't have another fuck up. We have to have like a success.
So that was plausible. They knew it was going to happen, but they just let the astronauts go along with the launch. They pulled them out of there in the last minute, and they had a backup plan already in place. And where they take them is they're in this fucking movie studio. And it's like a TV.
It's like an old, like an abandoned military base, like out in the desert.
Yeah, it's been converted into a damn Mars landing field. And they got the capsule there, and they go, we're going to reenact it right from here. And you guys are going to be heroes. And we're going to like save the space program and America. You're doing America a great service, but we can't. You fail.
Also, they threatened their families if they didn't go along.
What if
you
don't
do it? So there was that too.
Your families and all this kind of shit. And so there was all these little. They were like, your families are all on an airplane together. If anything were bad to happen to that airplane, you know,
sure would hate something bad to happen.
So there was
guys,
no choice.
Families.
They had to go through it.
And they were not happy about it.
And they go through the whole thing in the movie. You're like, wow, this is a weird movie. And then all of a sudden, there's a damn twist. When the capsule comes in for a landing, it burns up on reentry.
Which was not planned.
And they're like, well, wait a minute, what's going to... And they go, oh, shit.
Oh, shit.
And, yeah, and those astronauts fucking break the fuck out of there because they know that they're going to kill them. So they're going...
Because they'll have to.
Yeah. So then it's kind of like a big chase sequence, and they're out in the damn desert trying to survive. And the CIA or this special company that's been hired by the CIA's trying to hunt them down and kill them. And you just got to wait to see. You know, I don't want to spoil everything. But a bunch of shit happens and a bunch of shit happens.
Thank you, though. That was very
sensitive. Yeah, that's all I'm saying. But it was a good flick. I enjoyed it. And I think we watched it for free, didn't we?
Yeah, I think it's on Amazon Prime for free.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think we had to pay to rent this.
Yeah, I don't think I had to pay $3 or $4 to see it. But it was a fun watch.
I had a good time with it. Yeah. Well, because, like I said, all I knew about it, because, like you said, I said, oh, well, I thought it was about faking the moon landing. It's actually about faking a Mars landing, which, you know, same difference. And it's interesting, too, because if you see some of these, like, crazy conspiracy documentaries and stuff that people make, about faking the moon landing, like Stanley Kubrick faked the moon landing.
Yeah.
They use stills from this movie, like on the cover of it and everything. I'm like, do they know that that's from Capricorn 1 or no? Or do they just like, look, here's proof that it's like there's a capsule and stuff. I have to say, too, that I love, even though NASA in this is ostensibly like the bad guys.
Yeah.
Because they have people killed and disappeared and shit like that. NASA were actually really good sports about it, and like they did like a consulting on the movie, and they gave them like a bunch of shit, like a bunch of they gave them like a lunar lander prototype that they could use in the movie. And they were just like, that's okay, make us look like villains. We don't give a shit.
Well,
I guess
it wasn't NASA doing it though.
Well, Hal Holbrook worked for NASA, but I think there was like some other.
He worked for other agencies too, and that was like a hired agency. I think it was dressed up to kind of look like NASA, but they were CIA or CIA contracted company. Because where the fuck, NASA doesn't have attack helicopters out of the blue.
No, they would have had to contract with somebody. But the whole thing about it was they had somebody behind them. I think it was NASA, but they had somebody behind them that wanted the funding to keep going. Was it the president or the vice president?
They were in
didn't,
on it too.
Well, no, one of them didn't want to keep the funding going. They said, we can't afford going to Mars and all this other bullshit. So they were afraid that if they did this Mars launch and it fucked up, then they were going to have their funding pulled. Yeah. So they were like, well, this has to go like perfectly. No matter what, so we can keep our funding going.
Yeah. The movie, I thought the movie was awesome, though. It had all-star cast from the past, a lot of legends. The edit's good. It fucking pulls you in. It's pretty fast. It's old-school practical effects. It's old-school kind of dialogue and just the way it's edited. It's just, it's very nostalgic for the 70s era. 70s drama, yeah. The way they did things was different.
Can I say I loved... What you know what I think my favorite thing about this movie, other than that like awesome like plane and helicopter chase, was Elliot Gould. I loved Elliot Gould in this. He's like a journalist who figures out that something maybe is weird going on. So he's kind of like investigating. And Karen Black is also a journalist and like a friend of his. Yeah. And when they have, they only have a couple scenes together, but like they're kind of like back and forth. Like it's like so funny. Yeah. And it's like the dialogue there is funny. But Elliot Gould is like a great character. I mean, he's good in everything. I like him, and he's like a really good character actor. But I really, really like him in this. Like I said, the other two astronauts, O.J. Simpson plays one, and Sam Waterston plays the other one. But they don't really have a lot of... They don't have much screen time, and they don't have like a lot of character development. Like, you know, they're just kind of like background astronauts. It's mostly about James Brolin. He's like the captain of the mission, Brubaker. So it's kind of like, and he's the one that has the most, because the other two astronauts, when they find out that it's like, yeah, we're going to fake this, those two guys are kind of like, well, they don't like it, but they're just kind of like, yeah, but, you know, they're going to kill our families as we have to go along with it. And James Brolin is kind of like, nah, bro, it's like, this is like, you know, this is like a big deal. So he's like taking the moral high ground. Like, we can't do this. It's a lie. And we're like perpetuating, you know, this on the American public and everything like that. So he's kind of more, like the other two guys are kind of more willing to go along because they don't want their families getting hurt.
As I was watching this, it kind of reminded me of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It wasn't Spielbergian as much as that, but there's something about the tone and the situation, you know, government cover-up and space and people running and trying to run from government agencies. It kind of reminded me of Close Encounters in a certain way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It kind of, remember how the government in Close Encounters was faking the damn toxic waste spill and grabbing people? And it just kind of reminded me of that. And they were, you know, real duplicitous, and it turned out they were hiding a damn UFO landing that was scheduled to take place. And it was kind of like, in a weird way, a reversal of that. It's kind of like that told it out of order.
Yeah,
just kind of the way it felt. I think the way things were filmed too, and storytelling, just kind of reminded me of that.
Yeah, because a lot of 70s movies had a similar kind of like vibe to it.
Yeah.
This movie actually, I think it cost less than $5 million to make. And it was actually, it ended up being a really big hit. I think it was like the biggest hit because it was independently produced. Mm-hmm. But I think it ended up being the biggest independent movie that year. Like it was a big crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Remember, we talked about it when I was a kid.
Well, it's like the critics were kind of mixed on it because some of them said, oh, you know, it's good, but it's like not super believable and stuff, which I get that. Yeah. It's, you know, it's not really. But, you know, then some other critics said, yeah, it's like super fun. It's like kind
of
fun melodrama. Yeah. It's just kind of like a fun kind of thing. Yeah. But audiences really did. Respond to it, so you know there was that kind of thing too. But here's the funny thing, what I was gonna say, what's one of the best things about this movie, like I said, all I knew about it was that it was about somebody faking, you know, the moon landing or Mars landing or whatever. I didn't expect that to only be like the first half. That's really only the first half of the movie. You know what I mean? And then like halfway through the movie, you know, the mission ends. And then something, and I was like, oh, I was not expecting that. And I was just like, oh shit, they're in trouble now. So it was just, then the second part was like this whole kind of like them trying to evade people that were trying to get them and stuff. I found this quote on Wikipedia. Peter Hyams, the writer director, he says, this is like fucked up, but it still made me laugh. He said, O.J. Simpson was in this movie, and Robert Blake, was in Busting, which was the first movie he'd made. So he said, I've said many times, some people have AFI Lifetime Achievement Awards. Some people have multiple Oscars. My bit of trivia is that I've made films with two leading men who were subsequently tried for the first degree murder of their wives. So, yeah. So that's gotta kind of count for something, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I just thought that was kind of, I said that's fucked up, but I still thought that was like kind of funny.
Yeah, got people in the car, mostly Karen, Rob, and Lee. It's just Rob and Karen Rob. They're talking about this movie, and they just saw it recently. Karen Rob couldn't believe they missed it at the time, but they enjoyed it. It kind of holds up, but it's 70s nostalgic charm. Kind of takes you back. If you were a kid, you kind of remember the gestalt and the tone of the time and the thinking of the time, the way people thought, the way movies were told. You know, I don't know how it would appeal to a person in their 20s. A lot of it probably go over their heads. Just, you know, in terms of the nostalgia factor, I don't think they'd know what we were talking about. But if you were grew up as a kid in the 70s or the 80s, it's just kind of like, oh yeah, I remember that guy. And oh yeah, I remember when movies were like this. And it was good.
I kind of feel like if you're into like conspiracy type movies, you'd probably like it. Because it's like that. You know, it doesn't necessarily, you don't necessarily have to understand like the context or have been around in the 70s. I mean, it helps, obviously.
Yeah.
But the story's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
That, you know, we need funding for this and we can't fuck this up. So we're going to just pretend that we went to Mars. I mean, you know, what do you call it? The rocket actually goes there, so the astronauts don't.
Yeah, and they're asking, did Telly Savalas rock up for the movie? He's rocked up to the whole fucking thing. When you do see him, he's a wild ass flying a damn crop duster, and he picks up one of the astronauts out in the desert, thinking that the astronaut is a fucking bank robber and that he has money.
And then he's going to get loot.
Get half the loot. He doesn't realize.
Well, the journalist keeps telling him, he's like, just go pick him up. It's my friend. Go pick him up. It's like, what, did he rob a bank or something? No. Yeah, and it's kind of like, but then he just assumes anyway. He's like, can I have half the loot? He's like, yeah, fine. Yeah. You can have half the bank robbery loot.
and the plane he's in is a biplane. It's a crop dusting biplane.
And he keeps telling Elliot Gould, put your head down. Yeah, put your head down.
With the open cockpit and stuff. So he goes all Red Baron and shit, fucking flying, flying low as he can, as fast as he can. And trying to outsmart these attack helicopters, and the fucking helicopters are hitting his plane. And that did happen. That helicopter did hit that plane.
Yeah, that's like I said, the only things that are obstacles, I'm pretty sure, are the close-ups.
Yeah, I was like, whoa, that was a good one.
Of them, like in the plane. But other than that, when you see the planes from far away, they're hitting each other and stuff, I'm pretty sure that's right.
Whoever took that shot, he's got the camera, he's leaning out the side door of the chopper. I think it was an OH-58, and you see the skid of that OH-58. Hit dead center of the upper wing spar of that fucking biplane. Boom! And he does it a couple times. Boom! Boom! And he starts trying to knock that airplane down. And you can see that pilot look in the cockpit looking up. And it was that good. Man, that was real. And there was a dude, a stuntman, hanging fucking on the bottom wing.
On the wing,
On the wing spar up against the fuselage, hanging from the wing. He's down there on the wing, like a wing walker.
Because like a couple of those shots, like when that plane kind of goes through that cliff and it just goes whoo like that, I was like, holy shit, look at that.
And just
they would just do that with CGI nowadays.
Yeah, and just the shadow, all the wind going and the skid and the background behind the fucking plane. They couldn't have faked that shot in the 70s and gotten it to look that real. That was a real shot of them hitting that airplane.
Yeah, because like I said, if they'd done, and even the opticals in this where they do, like, you know, the insert shots with, you know, James Brolin on the wing that they show his face and stuff, that's an optical, but it looks actually really good. You can see around the edges slightly like you usually can with that kind of green screening kind of shot, but not as bad as like some movies from that era. Actually, not nearly as bad, because I had to like actually squint to look it, and it was like HD.
Yeah, and there were some chase scenes that were pretty good. Some car wrecks. There's some action in it.
Yeah, where those cars were chasing. Well, no, what happened was that Elliot Gould's character, Caulfield, his name was. He was a reporter. And he was, so he's in his car, and then he was like, he had a friend that worked at NASA that was kind of like, well, he noticed that something was wrong. He's like, why is the TV stuff, like, from Mars coming in faster than the telemetry information? He's like, that shouldn't happen. And he got suspicious because he kept reporting it to, like, the higher-ups, and they're just like, oh, you know, that console is just broken. Don't worry about it. And that friend, like, disappears.
Yeah.
And they do, that was like the, one of the creepiest scenes. Like I said, this is not completely believable, but it's still like kind of creepy. That friend disappears and Elliot Gould is like, where the fuck did he go? And he goes to that dude's apartment. And when he gets to the apartment, there's this woman living there. And she's like, I've been living here for however. And he goes in and it's all different. And it's all like redecorated.
Yeah.
And it's like the lease still has that woman's name on it. And he's just kind of like, okay, now this is not right. And then like he gets in his car and somebody's fucked with his car, like cut the brake lines or, you know, and shit like that. So the car just keeps like speeding up and he can't stop it. And it goes off a bridge and it's like all this other kind of crazy stuff. That's a really, really great scene too, that whole... Yeah. That you know, but it's fun. It's like kind of a, like a fun action movie conspiracy thriller type of thing. Like I said, you got to suspend your disbelief, but come on, it's you know,
it's Hollywood. Well, that's Hollywood. It's an American movie from the '70s. It's just trying to give you something to watch.
Yeah, just have a good time with it. Right. And like I said, it really did seem like audiences responded really, really well to this. This was like the highest grossing independent film that year.
Yeah.
This one. And actually, Peter Hyams, the director, he said when he went to like all the premieres and stuff, he said people like cheered and stuff.
Yeah.
Like stood up and cheered.
This movie could easily compete with the movies of the day and beat movies of the day. A lot of the movies of the day were mostly dialogue based. Back in the '70s, most of them were just dialogue based kind of. Vapid humor, vapid fucking comedies, or kind of bullshit, lowball police movies, kind of depressing, you know. I could see this would have been exciting for back in the day.
Yeah, it's like I said, I thought it was like pretty.
Yeah,
fun.
It had action sequences and shit, and fucking involving planes and cars and spies, counterintelligence guys trying to do spy
people
action.
People getting bumped off.
Fucking conspiracy. Theory stuff, space program, it just kind of had it all.
Karen Black, sexy ass.
Karen Black.
Even though, like I said, it was supposed to be, actually, it was supposed to be Candace Bergen that was supposed to do that part, but then she couldn't do it for whatever reason. So, Karen Robson, I knew they were going to do that guy in. I know, see, that guy, he was kind of like...
Well, he knew that, like, hey, man, fucking that video signal should be coming here later. Where's the time delay?
Yeah.
You know? Like, and that transmitter, whatever's transmitting that is close. It's not far out in between here and Mars.
And then he just kept reporting it, and then they were just kind of like, nah, it's fine.
He trusted his chain of command. His chain of command was in on it. Fucking knocked his ass off.
Yep. Yeah. They never did, like, specifically. He just disappeared.
They knocked his ass off.
Well, I know that, but they never said, like, exactly, like, where they
the
put
world
him
of,
or nothing.
The world of shadows got him.
They just, but they just made it so, but creepy enough, it's like they didn't just have him disappear. They made it like he had never existed.
Never existed, right.
Which I thought was that's even creepier. Even though, like I said, much harder to do.
If you don't have any close relatives or living relatives, like your parents are gone, you're not married, and you don't have any close, they could do that. And it could be that they looked into his background and they're like, he's got no living relatives. Shit, he never existed.
Yeah.
They can do
that. We're just going to pretend, never born.
If you don't believe me, then shit. There have been people that died up in their apartments with no surviving relatives and the body laid in there 6-7 years with a damn TV going.
Yeah, it's happened before. Sad, but it has happened.
Yep.
Like I said, if you don't really, if no one expects you to be anywhere,
then you just
like if you're retired or if you don't really have any family that you check on, or
it happens all the time.
Then that's kind
of
scary.
Some of those dudes can die in another city, and he's a John Doe over there, and they just throw his ass away. And in other places, he never showed back up, and it's just forgotten.
Yeah. Well, it's a big world.
Yeah, it's a big
world. You
know,
and there's lots of people. And like I said, if you want to see something really alarming, go to like fucking Wikipedia and go to like unidentified murder victims.
There's lots of them.
There's tons of them. Yeah. So many. It's like so scary. And like I said, it's usually people that, I mean, a lot of times it's like younger people that, you know, ran away or, you know, did something else. Like,
you just can't put a name on them.
Are marginalized or something like that. And they went somewhere else, like went to another state or somewhere, and nobody knew them there.
You can't match a name up with the body, so you don't know who it is.
Yeah, because you don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's even in this day and age, I mean, it's easier now to identify them, but...
And in a situation like that, if the body disappears and you didn't know the name, then it never happened. Jenny's done whole books on them.
Yeah.
Some people just fall through the cracks. They're not even reported missing. Some of those ones that serial killers get, they're not even reported missing.
Yeah.
Nobody knows they're even dead or they have ever existed.
Yeah, because like I said, some of them are estranged from their families and they live like, you know, several states away or something and their family doesn't even know.
Family doesn't want to hear from them.
Yeah, there's that too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Louis says the 70s was the decade for disaster movies and political thrillers.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many of them. And it's we've really kind of gone down the rabbit hole, haven't we?
Yeah.
I've just been in like a 70s kind of like... Yeah.
We need to do some 70s disaster flicks, some good ones like Poseidon Adventure and fucking Tower Inferno.
Yeah, those used to, like, I used to watch those all the time every time they were on cable.
The thing about a disaster movie is the attractive quality of them back in the day, the market liked them because they were always an all-star cast.
Yeah, they always got all the fucking people
in there. Everybody in it was some kind of star celebrity. There'd be 50 of them. Each one of them had a bit part. And usually it was in some kind of glamorous location, and a disaster would happen there. And then it's kind of like survival adventure. Disaster driven, not character driven. And it's just an excuse to see all your favorite celebrities get fucked up.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, gee, where can I never knew I wanted this, but I'd really like to see Leslie Nielsen fall into a crack in the earth. Yeah, you know what I mean? And here's a movie that will accommodate you. One of the ones that I've seen most recently, because they did it on the newer Mystery Science Theater that they had on Netflix, was Avalanche.
Yeah.
That had Mia Farrow in it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a terrible movie, but I mean, the riff tracks of it was, or the MST of it was like super, super fun.
Avalanche, I think, was made for TV, wasn't it?
It's hard to tell with that era, because a lot of them kind of looked like that.
Yeah, because it became a huge glut of fucking disaster films, and they got worse as they went along, really, from what I remember.
I kind of feel like in the 70s, there was a whole bunch of nature run amok ones, too, like Kingdom of the Spiders, Empire of the Ants, Food of the Gods.
Yeah.
You know, there was a whole Orca. There was like a whole bunch of them.
Well,
like
you
that.
Had Jaws. You got a top Jaws. Yeah. The top Jaws with a fucking killer whale.
Shit, man, in Italy, I think they made like 50 bajillion ripoffs of Jaws. Most famous probably being The Last Shark, but they also did Devilfish, which MST also did. But I kind of want to watch some of those. What was the Swarm? I forgot about that one. Wasn't the Shat in that one? Was the Shat? No, the Shat was in Kingdom of the Spiders. Who was in the Swarm? The one with all the bees.
I don't remember.
They had like terrible, terrible like traveling bat shots of all the bees. Because obviously, I mean, some of the close-ups, if I remember, I haven't seen it in a long time, but some of the close-ups, they actually put bees on people's faces or took dead bees and glued them on there. I don't know what the fuck they did.
Airport 77. That's right. Fucking Louis called out a good one.
Yeah. There were like three of them.
Yeah, and then Airport 75 had Karen Black in that as well.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh man!
Roller Coaster, Isabel.
Maybe that's the next thing we should do. We should do 70s disaster.
Louis says it's Airport 75 and 77, the holy trinity of disaster films.
Well, that's what the movie Airplane was parodying.
Yeah,
specifically like those types of movies.
Yeah, you got me on something there, man. Maybe we have to go see the Airport series.
Like I said, now I'm kind of, it's like...
They're probably for free on fucking Amazon. Probably.
They might be. We should go look in there. Because like I said, I'm kind of in on the 70s vibe now. And it's like I'm liking like all the political thrillers and the conspiracy thrillers and stuff. But I kind of want some cheese in there too. Yeah. I actually wouldn't mind rewatching Orca because I remember really liking that when I was a kid.
I've never seen All the President's Men, and I remember that was around that time.
Henry Fonda was in The Swarm.
Was he?
Yeah, I knew there was like, it's always like big stars. Because wasn't, I think Elizabeth Taylor was in Empire of the Ants, I want to say. Was she in Empire of the Ants? She was in one of those.
Hey, Louis, what was the synopsis? What was the situation with All the President's Men?
Yeah, we need to see that one again, too. We have a huge list of shit we have to redo.
I don't think that was a spy one.
Yeah, I can't even remember. It's been
another one that came to mind. Remember the China Syndrome?
Yeah.
Got to see the China Syndrome. That had Peter Fonda in it, right?
I can't remember.
And Elsa had Jane Fonda. Was they in the same movie, I think, Peter Fonda and Jane Fonda? Or was it Jack Lemmon? Was it Jack Lemmon and Jane Fonda? She was playing the news reporter in the reactor in the nuclear power plant was getting ready to melt down. It was going to cause the China Syndrome. It was a disaster movie, but it's about nuclear power. I remember liking it.
Yeah, I don't remember if I saw that. Like I said, I'm sure I saw all these because they used to be on cable like all the time. I don't remember. Oh, somebody said we need to see Clute as well.
I don't remember that one.
Which I saw that one a long time ago too. I remember that one being good.
I don't know that one.
I remember that one being good. That had Jane Fonda in it, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, Louis says it was about the Watergate scandal, All the President's Men.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, like I said, after Watergate happened, everybody's like, ooh, we're going to make all these fucking conspiracy movies and shit like that.
Which What's funny is that something like Watergate would happen today and nobody would notice it. It was only a big deal back in the day.
Well, because it was one of those things. Well, and it
they cheat? The government cheats?
Well, I don't know if it was just, I mean, it was that, like, everybody kind of points to that, but then there was the whole, like, Vietnam War debacle, and there was all that kind of stuff going on, too, where, so it was almost kind of like a, I don't know if it was like a slow disintegration of trust in authority, but, you know what I mean?
Well, that's another thing that's funny, is fucking Vietnam fucking upset them, but that was nothing really compared to the fucking two versions of Iraq War and Afghanistan. Both of those were probably worse. Maybe not in body count, but just in corruption.
I think at this point, everyone's just so, like, inured to it because they're just like, of course.
They're like, yeah, of course.
They don't expect any better, so it's like they don't get outraged.
Of course they steal money. Of course this is about...
I think that's what it is. Everyone's just so cynical.
Of course they're doing this for contract money. Yeah.
Wasn't it? I think there's a really famous quote. I think it was Lily Tomlin that said it. It said, no matter how cynical you get, you can't keep up.
Yeah, right.
I think she said that. Please correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, Louis says, Clute is a great movie. Jane Fonda and Donald Sutherland, if I remember correctly. Right. Yeah, I remember that being really good. I have to, like, watch that one again. Holy crap, we have so many movies.
Rob saying Roller Coaster, one called Roller Coaster. That's a mess, I guess it's a disaster flick in an amusement park.
I don't think I ever saw that one. Did I ever see that one? Huh.
I remember the Poseidon Adventure as a kid.
Yeah, I remember seeing that one. And I remember Towering Inferno.
I remember Towering Inferno, but I don't remember any details. I think Poseidon Adventure had
was Shelley Winters in that?
A bunch of people were,
And, or am I thinking of
the dude from McKell's Navy. What was his name? The guy that also played the cabbie in Escape from New York.
Oh, yeah.
What's that guy's name again?
I can't think of it. Ernest Borgnine.
Ernest Borgnine, that's right, yeah. He was in it, and it's just all-star cast, just everybody's in it. And you never know who's going to be a hero or who's going to be a coward. You know what I mean? Some of them go out like chumps, from what I remember. Some of them go out like chumps, and some of them go out like heroes.
You know what we should do? I just thought of this. I don't know why I just thought of this. You know what we should do? Maybe this would be too hard to do. Maybe we shouldn't do it, because I kind of like keeping shit freewheeling, so like whatever we're in the mood for watching.
Yeah.
But it would be kind of neat if, like, for 1 week or like this month, we're gonna do all disaster movies, or we're gonna do all, you know what I mean, like for the matinee, not for the other shit. But like I said, maybe that would be too difficult and we'd get sick of them after a while.
We just do them as they come.
Yeah, because normally we don't like really the matinees, we don't really plan them ahead all that much. We're usually just kind of like, what do we feel like watching? A new thing or an old thing or something, or somebody sends us one and we're like, oh, we should watch this and like talk about that. So I kind of feel like, I don't know, maybe we won't do that because that requires too much planning.
Yeah.
And I kind of like to be just able to just vibe with whatever I feel like watching.
We'll give you some disaster flicks.
Because now I'm kind of like, I kind of want to watch some like cheesy ass 70s disaster flicks. Yeah. I could get into that.
70s had some fucking good storytelling in it.
And can we please watch Orca? I seriously want to watch Orca.
And it had some, some of the shit was cheesy. You know, but it was still good, you know, from what I remember. It's gonna go, you know, we've been watching the 70s recently, and it's satisfying. One thing about 70s movies is that the storytelling is very easy to follow. It's not very artistic. It's just kind of straightforward.
Well, depends on the director you're talking about, I guess.
But in general, it's just kind of, everything's very normal. Nothing's real special or ultra fancy. They're not really into that.
Louis says, I think they filmed some scenes of Roller Coaster at Magic Mountain.
Okay, yeah. Probably did.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's probably Colossus.
Although, like I said, if I'm watching it, because, you know, when I was a kid, you know, my dad worked for Cablevision, so we had, like, all the cable channels, like, from pretty much when they started. So when I was little, we just kind of said, and my parents didn't really care, like, what we watched, so we could watch, like, horror movies or whatever. So, you know, me and my brother would just kind of, like, sit around and, like, watch whatever was on. You know what I mean? Disaster movies, horror movies, comedies, whatever. So it's like we saw, so I kind of feel like over the years I ended up kind of seeing everything.
Yeah.
You know, in one context or another.
But, I just remember a lot of 70s movies that I kind of touched on when I was a kid that I want to go back and see if they stand up, you know what I mean, or if I remember them accurately.
Yeah, because sometimes, you know, like I said, sometimes you saw movies from back then and you're like, man, that was awesome. But then when you see it when you're an adult, you're like, oh my God, what the fuck?
Yeah.
That was awful.
Yeah.
But Honestly, lately, though, I've seen movies. I think what's happened to me lately is that I see some movies from, you know, back in the 70s, and I was just kind of like, meh, or they didn't make much of an impression. But then when I see them again, like now, I'm kind of like, wow, that was really good.
Some of those.
I didn't appreciate them back then, I guess.
Some of those cop slash detective movies I've never seen. Like, I've never seen Bullet. I need to see Bullet.
We were thinking about watching that the other day because that kind of came up on Amazon Prime too, didn't it?
That's a famous movie. I've never seen it.
I think I've seen. I don't know if I've sat all the way through it, but I think I've seen it like in pieces.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because sometimes, like I said, sometimes you'd be flipping through the channels and you would watch it for 20 minutes and then you wander off and do something else. But I think like over time, I did end up seeing all of it, just not in order. So there was that thing.
Isabel's talking about an old TV disaster movie called Super Train. I remember it. I remember that. I don't remember anything about it, but I remember the title. I remember seeing it, that I did see it. It was like a big event. And I don't think it was all in one night. I think they played it over a two-night period, I think, if I remember correctly.
She said it's more 70s than the 70s
were. Yeah. And I think it played it in two parts over a weekend.
I think so. There was actually a lot. The 70s, I kind of feel like, were the sort of the golden era of TV movies. There was a lot of shitty ones, but there was a lot of good ones, too. You know what I mean? Like, I kind of have a soft spot for a lot of those, like, TV horror movies back then. Yeah. There were, like, actually some really good ones. Last night we watched on Riff Tracks, we watched the Riff Tracks version of The Guy from Harlem.
Yeah.
Black which Black was, Black. Man, that was, like, some sub-Rudy Ray Moore. I mean, you think the Rudy Ray Moore ones were amateurish? Holy crap. This one was like, but it was still like pretty funny though, like pretty entertaining.
Yeah, but it wasn't. I think it was supposed to be entertaining. I don't think it was supposed to be funny though.
Well, no, I don't think it was supposed to be funny.
Yeah, the Rudy Ray movies were fucking funny. They were supposed to be funny. They were a lot cooler. Rudy Ray was cooler.
Yeah. Yeah. But these ones were just kind of like, man, there was just so much wood paneling and pink polyester leisure suits.
How many girlfriends has this dude got? He's got a girlfriend of every color. He's got a white one.
But I like that he was kind of like low key.
And he was and he was fucking some African president's wife, the first lady from another country. It's fucking crazy.
Because everyone was just kind of like, well, he's like hired to protect them. He's like a bodyguard, and then he's like, well, I guess we're just gonna like have sex now. And she's like, okay, I guess that's how that goes.
And then his white girlfriend finds out, but she only gets a little bit mad.
Yeah, she's just kind of like, and not only that, but he would bring the people he was babysitting to her apartment and be like, hey, can you get out of here? Like, so she'd have to get a hotel
so he could
bang some other chick in her apartment.
Yeah.
And she didn't like punch him in the taint. I'm like, oh my God, girl.
Yeah, he was flexing his power.
I guess. I thought it was funny. This is kind of terrible, but like the Riff Tracks guys kept calling his white girlfriend Small Boob Jessica Simpson because she did look exactly like Jessica Simpson. I mean, I have to say, like weirdly, as shitty as the movie looked, like quality.
It was entertaining, but Rudy Ray was better.
Well, because the Rudy Ray Moore ones were a lot more batshit crazy.
Yeah, they were this supposed one, to be crazy.
Yeah, and this one kind of seemed like just kind of a low-key Shaft sort of vibe, so it didn't have anything too nutty going on in it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Rudy Ray Moore ones were just straight up insane.
Yeah. Well, he knew it was his job to entertain you.
Yeah.
So he was fucking Rudy.
I think Tubi has a bunch of his movies, because didn't we watch Petey Wheatstraw, The Devil's Son-in-Law?
Gotta see some more of them.
That was fucking crazy.
Petey Wheatstraw, that was the fuck. He was possessed by a demon.
Yeah, that was like, that was pretty entertaining. Because like I said, he went like a lot more batshit crazy ideas instead of just like like a private investigator or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
All right. So is that all we're gonna say? Okay. So we'll be back tomorrow afternoon, and tomorrow we're gonna be talking about Midnight Cowboy, that classic, because we just watched that one as well. So that's the one we're going to be talking about tomorrow.
Okay, Louie came up and says, according to Wikipedia, Super Train was a TV series. 9 episodes were made. Okay.
Oh, okay.
So I remembered it was multi-episodes. I thought it was 2, but yeah, okay. 9.
Now I'm going to have to check that shit out, too. Man, we got so much shit we got to catch up on, man. And it's like, it's bad because there's like all this stuff from like old shit I want to watch, and then there's like new shit keeps coming out that I want to see too, and I'm just like, God damn it, I'm never going to live long enough to see all this stuff.
All right, we're going to shut it down.
All right, so we'll be back tomorrow talking about Midnight Cowboy. Thank you everybody for dropping by and discussing some movies with us, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.